course, there's been some great achievements along the way. Even during the very desolate years of the Cold War, there was the management of decolonization, which can be legitimately characterized, I think, as the largest redress of human rights in history. There was the invention of peacekeeping as a wholly new means of conflict management. There were the giant strides made by UN programs and agencies, WHO, UNHCR, WFP, UNRWA, UNICEF, UNDP, and all the rest, in feeding and the starving and sheltering the dispossessed, immunizing against disease. Since the end of the Cold War, the new cooperative environment that we supposedly experienced enabled major new advances in peacemaking, with more civil conflicts, civil wars, actually resolved by negotiation in the last 15 years, for the most part under UN auspices, than was the case in the previous 200 years. That's an achievement. Certainly tougher-edged peacekeeping, the development of much better strategies for post-conflict peace building. And a far more concerted international effort has been made than ever before to set and implement new agendas on a whole range of social and economic and development issues, including women, children, the environment, indebtedness, catastrophic disease. But the disappointments have really been pretty immense to rank alongside those achievements. It was the failure to respond effectively to large-scale atrocity crimes in Rwanda, the Balkans, Sudan. There was the bypassing of the Security Council in the 2003 invasion of Iraq. There was a serious marginalisation of the UN and the erosion of the effectiveness of its major treaties in the areas of arms control and disarmament. There was the complete politicisation and loss of credibility of the Human Rights Commission, continued management lapse and conspicuous inefficiency in the performance of the UN Secretariat and its programs, many of its programs and agencies, a failure to meet many of the social and economic and development targets that were identified in those global agenda-setting conferences, and a general sense that the whole UN security system is still too geared to the preoccupations of its founders 60 years ago, states waging aggressive war against each other, and not responding adequately to the much wider range of human security threats and challenges which are likely to dominate attention in the 21st century. It was against this background, this perception of shortfalls, and particularly, of course, in the aftermath of the US decision to ignore the Security Council and lead the charge into Iraq in 2003, that we came to what Kofi Annan described a couple of years ago, famously, as a fork in the road, a moment no less decisive than 1945 itself. In effect, he said that either the international community could reaffirm the international rule of law and abide by the principles of cooperative internationalism, or it could descend into anarchy, finding ourselves utterly unable to cope with the security problems of the 21st century, terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, proliferation, continuing wars within and between states, organized crime, and the great pure human security issues of poverty and disease and environmental degradation. He identified 2005, this year, the UN's 60th anniversary year, as being the appropriate opportunity for the world's leaders to take stock of where the whole multilateral system had come to and take some major steps forward to reform and revitalise it. So in that context, he commissioned two major reports. One of them was from a so-called, rather pompously named, high-level panel on threats, challenges and change, which I was a member of, which reported at the end of last year, and the Jeffrey Sachs report on the Millennium Development Goals, which was published earlier this year. And then in his own report, In Larger Freedom, published in March, he superbly distilled the essence of those two earlier reports into a blueprint for change ranging over the whole set of development issues, security issues, human rights issues, and the basic architecture of the international system. In a speech in June this year, Kofi said, "I think we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to reform the organisation, and if we miss it, I don't know when world leaders are going to get that opportunity again." And I don't think he was exaggerating, because what made this year, what made 2005 a really critical watershed for the UN was the way in which three things came together in a way that simply hasn't been the case for a long time, and I suspect won't be the case for a long time yet again. That's to say, the combination of the perceived need for change, a detailed agenda for change, really fully worked through, and a clear opportunity for change with the 60th anniversary and all the summitry and expectations associated with that. But it's now become sadly apparent, with the World Summit come and gone this month, that we've almost completely blown this great opportunity. There were a handful of significant achievements, and I'll mention some of them, but overall, the final outcome declaration of the summit makes desolate reading, not least to those of us who've given our heart and soul over many years to trying to preserve and enhance the integrity and effectiveness of the UN system. Let me spell that out by taking you briefly through the major issues as they were articulated by the Secretary General, as they were debated over the last few months, and addressed or not addressed in the outcomes document. The issues are best understood as divided into these four clusters I've really already mentioned, relating respectively to freedom from want, that's the development issues, freedom from fear, the security issues, freedom to live in dignity, the human rights issues, and the institutional architecture issues. So starting with the development issues, here the news was essentially neutral, I guess, coming out of the summit. No major steps forward, but at the same time, none back. Although the US did create some major havoc in the negotiation process for a time, not only by not being prepared to make any new specific substantive financial commitments, which we knew about, but more alarmingly, by arguing against any reference even in the outcome document to the Millennium Development Goals. A broad consensus had already developed before the summit around the Millennium Development Goals and the outcome of the Monterey International Conference on Financing and Development a couple of years ago, and what's required from both developing and developed countries. For the developed countries, it involved more aid, both long-term, wider and deeper debt relief, and a really serious commitment to a decent outcome from the Doha trade round. And for the developing countries, reciprocally, it involved clearer national strategies for achieving stronger governance, eliminating corruption, and policies capable of generating economic activity, economic growth. Basically, the summit, as I said, preserved and reiterated that consensus, but without really doing anything much to translate this really by now quite familiar rhetoric into operational reality. So although this wasn't a total catastrophe by any means, what happened on the development side, it certainly didn't meet the hopes and expectations of many people, and it rather set the tone for much else that followed. In the large and critical area of security issues, there were four main areas of focus, which one can sort of summarise to bring the issues together. The first, on which the news was actually best, was in the area of further improving conflict prevention and conflict resolution capability, involving a commitment to better peacemaking capacity through better prepared and supported mediators and negotiators, a commitment to more readily available reserves, both military and civilian, for peacekeeping and other peace operations, and a far more systematic and coherent approach to post-conflict peace building through the establishment of a wholly new institution to fill a huge and long-standing international gap in this respect. This is the concept of the Peace Building Commission. The idea of the Peace Building Commission, which my own high-level panel really initiated, and I actually had quite a lot to do with, the idea was to bring together in a new institution, as I've said, serviced by a highly professional secretariat and with decent funding support, all the key stakeholders for each particular situation, including not only the UN's own programs and agencies, but also the international financial institutions, the World Bank and the IMF, the donor community, the relevant regional organisations, and of course, representatives of the countries in distress themselves.